Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining us today. It's my pleasure to be with you. My website is www.jbsba.com. I'm excited about Tom Mast being back on the show, ladies and gentlemen. Tom's been with us before. He's the author of Over a Barrel, A Simple Guide to the Oil Shortage. Tom's an expert in the field of energy efficiency, having studied and worked in that industry for more than 40 years. Started when he was only six. He's our good friend, Tom. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Jim.
It's good to have you back.
Well, I'm glad to be back.
Tom, one of the things that we didn't talk about the last time you were here is something that I know you do talk about, and you talk about it a little bit in your book, and that is the influences of petroleum, of carbon fuels, of crude oil on geopolitics. And I'd like for you to just give us a little tour historically and currently and look into the Tom Mast crystal ball and tell us a little bit about where you think it's going to be in the future. What's the influence of crude oil on geopolitics?
Well, it's very great in a nutshell. Just briefly, prior to World War II in the 30s, Japan was casting around for other sources of oil and beginning to beat up on the countries of Southeast Asia. And we told them we didn't like that, and that was one of the things that caused them to attack us at Pearl Harbor to neutralize our fleet.
They felt threatened, didn't they?
Absolutely. And then during the war, we had plenty, World War One, Two, that is, we had plenty of fuel. We had plenty of petroleum at that time right here in our own country, but neither Japan nor Germany did. Germany had to convert some coal into fuel for their aircraft, but that was difficult and inefficient, and it was one of their weaknesses. Also, it drove their strategy some to have to find oil fields in Romania and so forth to feed their war machine. During the latter part of the war, Roosevelt had a meeting with the King of Saudi Arabia and made some sort of a verbal arrangement to watch out, where we would watch out for Saudi Arabia militarily, and they would watch out for us helping supply our oil.
That was the first of an official relationship between the U.S. and Saud, the House of Saud, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, and apparently it was never written down, and so it's a little bit vague, but we have had a relationship with Saudi Arabia all this time, and they do have the largest reserves of oil in the world. And then, as we all know, we have had skirmishes in the Middle East since then, and continue to do so, with Iraq being the latest one, and there are issues other than oil, like Israel and so forth, that are driving friction in the Middle East, but oil definitely plays a role.
You know, I heard a speaker one time talking about, this was a couple of years ago, as actually was about the time we were either had just started the last invasion of Iraq or about that time, and he made this point. He said, "What's wrong with us protecting our interests in the Middle East militarily with regard to petroleum?" He said, "What's wrong with that?" He said, "If we didn't do it, and if we lost the connection, if somehow we didn't protect that interest and we lost the connection to that fuel supply," he made the point. He said, essentially something I've been saying for a long time, and that is that petroleum is the oxygen of our marketplace. I mean, don't forget what comes out of the gas pump. Think of all the other ways that petroleum affects our economy." He said, "Of course, you know, we need to be prepared to defend that connection militarily."
Well, that's one argument, but America, with 5% of the world's population, burns or uses 25% of the world's oil. So mm-hmm. do we really deserve to have such a disproportionate share, and do we want that to drive our
before you can answer that question, don't you also have to overlay the output of this country and the size of our economy and the importance of our economy to the global economy?
Well, it is very important, but let's move down the road 20 or 30 years, and let's say that China then has an economy larger than ours, and that they have to feed an oil machine too. So do they have the right to take what we thought was our share of the oil after that?
That's a good question, and we'll talk about that on the other side of these messages and more issues about petroleum. We're talking with the author of Over a Barrel, A Simple Guide to the Oil Shortage, Tom Mast. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate here in Chicago, to take us out.
I'm so happy.
Joe Cocker, ladies and gentlemen, a wild man and a major rocker, one of my favorites. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I guess I better start talking, hadn't I? I like Joe Cocker. He's a crazy man. Tom Mast is not quite as crazy. He's our good friend, though. He's a member of our Brain Trust. He's the author of Over a Barrel, A Simple Guide to the Oil Shortage. Tom, you got a website?
Yes, it's www.overabarrelbook.com.
All right, and I hope you'll check that out. Can we read a little bit of your book at that website?
Yes, it has the first chapter in it and some other information.
Folks, this is a good book, and I'll tell you what I think you'll like about it. If you're like me, you're not don't consider yourself to be an oil expert, but you're interested in the topic. It's not a big book, and it is a simple guide to the oil shortage. And the first section is called Understanding Energy. The second section is Understanding Oil. Another section is called Oil Alternatives, and then Consequences and Steps of Actions. And so it's really laid out well, Tom, and I congratulate you. I think the average American out there, the average person, could read this book very easily and gain a lot of understanding about why we are where we are. We're talking about geopolitics, and you made the comment as we went to the break, Tom, you know, what if China became the largest economy? And the truth is, many people are saying some 20, some 40 years from now that China will outpace the U.S. in the size of its economy. But don't you think by then, am I being too much of a Pollyanna by then to say that by then, would say 40 years from now? Because I do think it's going to be the longer term, not the shorter, before China becomes the dominant economy in the world. Don't you think by then we will have learned some new things about energy efficiency and about other forms of propulsion?
Well, I absolutely hope so, and that's the reason I wrote the book. I wrote the books so the average person in the United States could easily read it and understand oil, and then encourage his or her elected representatives to make good policy, to make a medium to long-term policy instead of all these short-term fixes. But we were talking before the break about whether America has the right to go take the oil that it needs. And what I would like to do is avoid our having to ask ourselves that question. If we can become more efficient, conserve what fuel we have, and develop alternative sources of energy, so we start becoming less dependent on overseas oil and, incidentally, also natural gas, which we're beginning to import, then we don't have to ask ourselves.
But aren't we already becoming a lot more efficient? I mean, if you look at where the marketplace is today, aren't we producing, when you look at what we're producing compared to what we're consuming, aren't we more efficient today?
Well, we are more efficient. The CAFE standards were implemented in transportation in the 70s when we had the big oil scare there, and cars do get roughly twice the gas mileage now that they did in the 1970s.
And not only internal combustion, but industry is more efficient with the petroleum they use.
Industry is more efficient, and appliances
utilities
are more efficient. But we're the percentage of oil that we import every year is at 58% now, but it continues to grow.
It's going up, and
even though we're more efficient, we're outpacing our efficiency with our a desire to drive bigger cars and more cars, and our population is increasing.
And Kiplinger says that 10 years from now, we're not going to be less dependent upon foreign petroleum. We're going to be more dependent upon it.
If we don't do something different, we are, yes.
Right. What do you think is the I'll tell you what, before we get, I want to ask you what you think is the reason why our petroleum prices are so high right now. But before we do that, I want to back up and talk a little bit about the president's energy plan. What do you know about it, and what do you think about his plan? One of the proposals of which is to drill in the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge.
Okay. In general, the speech he made about 10 days ago, I thought had a new tone, and I liked it.
I was there when he made that speech, by the way.
Oh really? Fantastic. He mentioned that the world oil supply is beginning to lag the demand, and that we need to be looking for other energy sources. And he wove the word technology throughout his speech as being what we need to look to provide the answers for big changes in energy over the next 25 years. And I thought those were a change of tone, but the bill itself that is before Congress and has been before Congress, still, even though it provides some incentives for research and development into alternative sources of energy and some incentives for increased efficiency, is still very weak in those areas, and it's primarily encouraging us to burn up our remaining oil as fast as we can, and we have less than 3% of the world's oil reserves in the United States, and it seems to me a policy to see how fast we can get rid of those is a policy to make us really dependent. So there are many congressmen who feel we need to just overhaul that bill and start over again, and I sort of fall in that camp. Far as Anwar is concerned, I don't think it makes a whole lot of difference in the overall scheme of things whether we drill in Anwar or not.
Don't we have to do something, and isn't that one step towards a solution?
It is, and I have no problem with it. The only thing I have a problem with is if people breathe a sigh of relief and say, oh, well,
right,
we've solved our problem
let's
for
don't
the next
fool
20
ourselves.
Years.
You're saying let's don't fool ourselves into thinking that's going to be the major solution. Stand by, Tom Mast. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with our good friend Tom Mast, the author of Over a Barrel.
Waiting for the break of day. Searching for something to
back. It's 7-2. I'm Jim Blasingame, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Tom Mast is here. He's a good friend of ours, member of our Brain Trust, the author of Over a Barrel. And the book, the website is overabarrelbook.com. Is that right, Tom?
That's correct.
Overabarrelbook.com. And you can read part of the book. I bet they can see the table of contents there, too, can't they?
I believe so, yes.
Folks, go read that table of contents. I think that'll get you interested in this book. And it's a book you can read in a very short period of time. You're going to get a lot of good information, and I think it'll benefit you. Tom, another member of our Brain Trust, Peter Huber, along with Mark Mills, wrote a book called The Bottomless Well. Now, that gives you a little bit of a perspective of how they feel about how much petroleum we have. And basically, I hope I'm not mistaking them. I know you know the book, and I know you know Mr. Huber. They basically say we got lots of petroleum. We got lots of crude oil. We're virtually never going to run out of crude oil, which is not what you say. Now, how do you reconcile your position with theirs?
Well, there are a lot of people who agree with me that petroleum is a finite commodity and there's only so much of it on this earth. And there are some people, a few people, and even some government agencies who feel like that even though it's finite, that it's going to be 30 or 40 years perhaps before it begins to run short. When people ask me this question, I point to a graph, and there's a graph in the book that shows the world oil discoveries of new fields, big new fields, by the decade for the last 50 or 60 years. And the discovery of new fields peaked in the 1950s, so the decade of the 50s, and the discoveries of new fields in the 1990s was down to less than 25% of what it was in the decade of the 50s. And also, oil companies admit that they're pumping 3 to 4 barrels for every barrel of oil they're finding these days. Mm-hmm. And so the fact of the matter is that we're living off of old fields. Once you find a field, well, it takes some decades to deplete it to the point that you abandon it. So we are living off of old fields, but we're just not finding the new ones. And when people say, well, we have a lot of technology and we are going to find more oil fields, I say, well, we had tremendous increase in the technologies in geophysics and the other technologies for the exploration of oil over the last 50 years. And the fact of the matter is that the findings of new oil went down, not upward. And the chances of our reversing that curve and heading it back dramatically upward, I think, are very slim.
I want to get you and Mr. Huber on the show sometime.
Okay.
And that, I hope you'll agree to do that. I think you will.
It'll
be fun to hear you guys debate that issue. Let's talk about the price of petroleum now. The price of oil at the pump, of gasoline at the pump. Is it going to remain at these levels that we have now, or is it going to go up or down over the next 12 months?
A simple answer to that is I don't know. If I knew, I would go to Wall Street
What's your opinion, though?
My opinion is that the present price of oil is not the problem. It's the symptom of the problem. And people are afraid, speculators and so forth, that there is going to be a shortage of oil. There hasn't
been one
yet. And
that's the reason the price is so high. A lot of the price, some of our other experts say that one of the reasons why gas is so high is because of speculation.
It's speculation, that's right. People are trading because
more so than supply and demand.
If we were to have a little interruption, then prices would skyrocket and these traders would make a lot of money. And so that's what's happening.
So if we could sort of abate the idea that we're about to run out of fuel, maybe the speculators would get out of the market. Is that right?
I would think so, yeah. And the best way to do that is not to see if we can find more sources of oil, because that's been what we've been doing all along. But we need to use less oil and also find alternatives for oil.
I hope that the price is because of the price increase is because of speculation, because one of the things we know about speculation is it's not a way of life, it's a means to an end. And speculation comes and it goes. So hopefully we can ride this out and maybe prices will come down. But you say that's not our problem, and we're going to get you back again another day and we'll talk about this some more. Tom Mass, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Oh, my pleasure.
And we'll do it again real soon. Next time, I'm going to get you on with Peter Huber, and we'll have some real fun. Thank you, Tom.
All right, thank you.
We'll see you next time. Tom Mass, ladies and gentlemen. The book is called Over a Barrel. Wherever books are sold, I'm sure it's available online as well. Tom Mast, M-A-S-T is his last name. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.